Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's freaking gorgeous around here. It's even Fukushima irradiated and everybody's happy because it's helped the economy. They've managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. I believe that we don't have a guest. Okay, hold on a second. We've just got a new number for our guest, Dean Garner. I'm popping that in for the studio now. Just having a little bit of a weird, strange difficulties today. While we're waiting for that, I just wanted to let people know that my love, my princess, Sarah, her car blew up, all right? Not like in a MI5 assassination sense of the word, but in the engine kind of got worn down to sandpaper and now it spews smoke like there's no tomorrow. And this was right after getting a $1,500 bill just to make it roadworthy again. It was a $2,000 car, and then the engine blows up, and so now it's another $1,500 on top of that, allegedly. So she's the one who really is responsible in a large part for this show even getting off the ground, all right? She supported me for, I think, maybe 5 years or so before I gained the listenership to have enough support to do the show that way. So if she ain't got a car, she can't work. So there's a couple of things I really, really love the listeners to do. This is not your responsibility, I know, and it's not an obligation, I know. However, I know that many of you have been enjoying this show for free and have not had too many opportunities to contribute in a lot of ways because, well, basically, you know, you just don't. I don't know how to get people to contribute other than financially. So there's one option there is financial assistance. If you want to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, there is a bank account number there which you can donate into directly. Automatic payments are absolutely valued and critical. And I want to give special mention to Chris, who has been donating every month basically since I started. And just recently when he saw my Facebook post about this car situation, he donated even more, even though he already donates every month. It's just, I'm really blown away by the generosity of some of the listeners to the show, honestly. I feel guilty and shamed about asking for help, all right? It's not easy doing this job. So the cost of repairs and or getting a new vehicle, round about the $2,000 to $3,000 mark. So it's not small chump change. But if 1,000 people contributed $3 each, hey, it's all done and dusted, isn't it? So please give generously. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, either donate directly into the bank account there or through PayPal. And I would strongly encourage and ask people to give us an automatic payment of donations because, well, basically it just means that we don't have to worry about whether or not there's cash in the account just to, like, basically I only need a couple of things in order to do this show. Electricity, a stable internet connection, and a car so I can go to protests and things of that nature. That's all I need. But I have not figured out a methodology of how to have those things yet without cash. One person on my Facebook said, if you think you need money, you need to wake the frack up. And he's out of his mind. Yeah, like, okay, I could live as a homeless person and look like I need a bath and a shave and what have you, and grab and eat roots out of that I've dug out of the ground, or something of that nature. Okay, but I'm not gonna. Well, at least I hope I don't have to. because I got like 10 hours of radio to produce a week, 10 hours of video, conversely, along with that, not to mention all the other radio shows and everything that I do. I need a stable base and of income just to pay the bill so I can keep continuing to do the work. If you are contributing to the show, just understand how grateful I am. And more to the point, there really isn't anybody else in New Zealand doing this. Okay, you have a look around, you try to find somebody who's doing more than a couple of hours a week of radio or video or anything. They don't exist. They don't exist. Let me say that one more time. They don't exist. In terms of daily, weekly contributions to the truth movement in media, there is only me. And that's really, really sad. I try very hard to bring on Kiwi guests and people like that to this radio program and give some coverage to the issues from this country's perspective. Because there ain't no country exempt from a new world order, really. Is there? I didn't think so. Hold on a second. I saw a very interesting thing on Facebook today. There are only three countries that don't have a Rothschild-controlled bank at the moment. Iran, South Korea, and Venezuela, and Libya used to be on that list. Get the picture? You know? We're all slaves, man. And I acknowledge the slave master relationship with myself and my listeners. And by the way, I also want people to attack me, to attack my personality, to attack my credibility, and to attack this show and to attack Guerrilla Media and to publish videos and talk about this on radio and expose me on a constant basis. This may sound really strange and ironic to some people, but I understand, absolutely understand, that those who think they're above being criticized are the ones who wind up really needing that criticism. Okay? It ain't infighting if somebody's actually doing something wrong and needs to have the dirty laundry aired. You know, that's all I'm saying. And indeed, I was attacked a couple of times in this last week, and I downloaded those videos of me being attacked by these people and uploaded them to my YouTube channel. I believe in transparency. Did they upload my video attacking them to their YouTube channels? No, they didn't. In fact, they demanded those videos be removed. You know, let's get off that subject altogether. Right. Well, we're still trying to get my guest, Dean Garner, on the line here. What was the other thing? Yeah. This is funny. And I think I mentioned it yesterday on the radio program. Some dude was killed by a shark in New Zealand a couple of days ago. Okay. And his death and this shark attack, which hasn't happened in New Zealand since 1976, has been front page news. Okay. For like all 4 days. Shark attack, oh my god, and only one person been killed by it, all right? You know, you never see police brutality getting that kind of coverage. You never see the bankers fracking over the entire fracking country getting that kind of coverage. You never see any of that. And what's interesting is that people don't seem to listen to the media much anymore, which is strange because they're supposed to be the ones to inform you, right? And people have figured out that they're not informing me at all. They don't have the agenda to inform me. Imagine what happens when you figure that out, when you figure out that the people whose job it is to inform you aren't actually doing their job, okay? You know, if they were employee of yours, you'd fire them, wouldn't you? preferably under some kind of a 90-day temporary employment contract. Okay, come on here. If you inform me, you will be able to keep in your job. If you don't inform me, you get fired. And that doesn't happen. Because, well, basically, that's not their job anymore. Their job is to distract you in any way, shape, or form that is possible. We have a caller on the air. Speaking of distractions, I believe it says Kevin in Montana. You are on the air, my friend. Welcome.
Hey, Vinny.
Yeah.
Surely you're not insinuating, are you, that Pete Santilli blew up your girlfriend's car?
No.
Oh, I was worried there for a moment. Relieved to hear that.
That's totally silly.
Well, you know, in a world of madness and chaos, right?
Hey, man, when it rains, it pours, and ironically, New Zealand's going through a drought right now. she's also quitting her slave job, too, Kevin. I've been telling her to quit her slave job for a long time.
If you lose your sense of humor, you'll go freaking nuts. I believe a great man once said that.
Yeah, don't know how great he is anymore, though.
Well.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a fundraiser coming up.
Do you?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
For American Freedom Radio?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Okay.
Well, don't we need to organize guests?
The time for it is drawing near because we need to get this situation sorted out post haste.
Yeah, absolutely. And hold on, I think we've got our guest now, Kevin Dean. Welcome.
Yes.
Great.
All right, Kevin. We'll see you later, man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah,
we'll talk about the fundraiser later.
Well, it's been a pleasure calling in. You take care, Vinny, and good luck, man.
Cheers, bro. All right. Dean, welcome to the program. There's some kind of bell ringing in the background there. Can you hear me, Dean? Hello? For frack's sake. Okay. We've been trying to connect Dean up on two different phone calls. And also onto Skype, he doesn't seem to be answering, or it goes straight to answer phone. His internet connection's really dodgy and stuff like that, so I reckon we could probably just flag it. Sorry, Dane, you had your opportunity several times, and we've done all we can. You can either sort it out and call into the radio broadcast on 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Otherwise, we'll just fare thee well. Okay. Actually, Kevin, if you're still listening, and I know you probably still are, I want to actually talk about this American Freedom Radio fundraiser that we've got coming up. We had this long conversation, me, Kevin, and Danny on the Skype there for a while, and came up with this massive list of, like, A-list guests, you know, like those really, really awesome guests that you get on these talk radio shows of this particular persuasion that just blow your frickin' mind and have, like, decent followings of their own kind and things like that. And so many of them, in fact, all of these people that we came up with suggestions for guests on, have already been on the American Freedom Radio Network, either as hosts or guests themselves. And what we want to do is have a marathon or even a couple of marathons and have a huge, huge, huge quantity of these A-list backlogged guests all stacked in a row. So that you won't want to turn off that radio dial for a good 24 hours and will want to listen through the whole way, okay? That's what we really want to do. And the key that we need about $100,000 for American Freedom Radio. Man, I'm talking about a hell of a lot of money today, aren't I? Sorry. I'm sorry. You know, because I know everybody is listening in. You know, I'm really sympathetic, really. I know what it's like to have a slave job. to have somebody you don't who doesn't respect you ordering you around every day and having nothing you can do about it because you got a family to feed. That sucks, man. And I'm really sorry to ask for money from these honourable, decent people like the listeners to this network. And it actually, I don't know, actually makes me kind of feel a bit stink, to be honest. And I apologise, but don't really have much of a choice. We're doing the work we can. And we don't really have much of a choice ourselves either. We can't go back to that kind of work. This is more important. And if you want to see it continue, we need your support. You know, need. Maybe you like to listen to this kind of program, but it's not free to produce this kind of stuff. Like I mentioned before, everything costs money if you want to do it right. And we don't really have a whole lot of sources of money. It's really sad. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
This part.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love.
Welcome back.
It's because it's when everything is just right.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We've going to skip on to our next guest here. We had some problems connecting Dean, and he wouldn't, and he's now unfriended me on Skype and called us unprofessional, even though he gave us two numbers for himself. We called them both. And he called into the caller line when he wasn't actually there. Okay, I'm the one who's unprofessional. My very special guest now is John Carman, coming on a little bit earlier. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you too, man. I don't have any idea who you are, to be honest, so let's have a conversation. Tell us who you are, bro.
Well, I'm an American here in Southern California. And I guess you guys are way down in the down under area, aren't you?
Yeah.
I've had books written about me because I was a famous whistleblower. Not to compare to Frank Serpico, but Frank Serpico was New York PD. I was U.S. Customs when I went into U.S. Customs. And that was back in 83 for about 16 years. But I started off at the age of 21 going straight into the United States Secret Service in Washington, D.C. Worked at the White House, protected Presidents Ford and Carter. And then from there, I went into the San Diego PD because I wanted to get into customs, and then went into another couple of law enforcement agencies before I finally got into the agency. And turns out it's got a lot of problems. It's rife with corruption. It still is.
Well, I saw a picture yesterday of a woman handing in a petition to the White House to label genetically modified food, and the Secret Service arresting her for handing in a petition to the president. And I noticed that they were all wearing sunglasses, and none of them looked particularly bright. And I thought to myself, never underestimate the power of stupid people wearing sunglasses.
Well, these glasses are light right now, but if I get into the sunlight, they go black, believe me. It protects our eyes. That's the biggest thing. That's what we do is we use our eyes quite a bit. We're always looking around, and it would bother people to actually, if you looked at somebody like that, to go, what are they looking at? They're always darting around, you know, but that's their observation, you know, training and so forth.
Like a suspicious character in a suspense movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're not used to it and you're not used to seeing somebody, I could pick you out of a crowd if I was looking for you or if I had a picture of you, but that's just because I'm looking for you. But if I was looking for a person who was nervous, he's kind of fidgeting, he's obviously nervous about something, then I'm going to focus in on that guy, you know.
See, me, I'm 6'4". You can pick me out of a crowd anyway.
Oh, well, you're just a little bit taller than I am. I'm 6'3", 200 300 pounds now, overweight. It would take me a minute to stand up, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We won't hold that against you.
But that's kind of interesting about the woman being arrested, because if she was out on the street and she attempted to hand something to the president, normally somebody else will take it and just grab it, and that's it. Unless maybe she tried to do it aggressively, then they overreacted, and then they're going to identify her and test the paper to make sure it didn't have anthrax all over it or something like that. So you'd be surprised at all the stuff that they have to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we used to X-ray everything that came in, even if it was a document coming from Langley.
You know, really?
Couriers would come in carrying a single piece of paper or two pieces of paper with a paper clip, and we would take...
Oh, John, we seem to have lost your audio there. Nuts. John, we seem to have lost your audio there. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, sorry about that. What were you saying?
Still here. Your video's not moving very much, though.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
All right, just reset it. Is that better?
Well, you probably have to refresh it, I guess.
Okay. Let's continue like nothing's happening.
Okay. What would you like to know? I mean, I was...
I was going to say, you know, he said how you x-rayed and checked everything, even if it's a document from Langley. If I was the president, that would be the one that I would demand get checked and x-rayed and thing like that, because if anybody's likely to assassinate a U.S. president, it's the CIA.
Well, yeah, and if you want to go back to JFK, I mean, I can tell you a lot of stuff about that I know, because when I was in the Secret Service at 21, the JFK incident happened in 63, which is before your time, and I was 10 years old. So who would imagine that, you know, 11 years later I would be in the Secret Service, and I actually get to see where the president lived, where he worked. The limousine that was actually used was kept in a special secret location, and there's a lot of stories behind that. And, in fact, we had briefings at training. After we went through basic, we went through a specialized training up in northern D.C., Maryland area. And they specifically told us on a special day that the JFK stuff was going to be discussed. An agent came in. He says the official answer from the agency is the Warren Commission report. That is the answer. So basically they didn't want to diffuse or contradict any other theories or anything like that, which, you know, even today, I mean, you've got Clint Hill, who was the agent that jumped up on the back of the limousine, who claims that he thinks that Oswald was the lone shooter. Well, how the hell would he know? In fact, all those guys were pulled off the limousine at the last minute. So there's all kinds of problems, and yet this guy wants to give out an opinion that he thinks Oswald was the lone shooter. I think that's BS. I think that there were more than three or four or five shooters all over the place, and there's even a picture of Oswald standing at the outside of the school book depository at the time of the shooting. So what do you want to do? You know, they want to blame it on a single lone male shooter because that's the lone male gunman theory.
It's convenient.
Yeah, it's convenient, and it goes back to like when Lincoln was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. Same type of deal. But yet there were other conspirators.
Why do all these set-up assassins always have three names? I don't get it. How come they've always got three names? You know, John Wilkes Booth, Lee Harvey Oswald. I think the guy who killed John Lennon had three names too.
Like Hinckley and all these other guys. That's what they do. They identify you.
Yeah, bad things come in threes.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how they do that. So when they start talking about your name, then be careful. It's like J. Edgar Hoover. I love J. Edgar Hoover, but why didn't he put his first name out? You know, if you look at a lot of these guys, some agents, U.S. attorneys, they don't want the first name out because it's very difficult to research your name if you don't know what the first name is. Think about it. That's how the computers are set up. And if you input your name, whatever your first name would be, V, middle initial, and then last name, how are they going to research and find out what you are, who you are, where you are, where you live, your cars, and all kinds of stuff that they can track you on. That's so there's a purpose for everything, I guess.
I didn't know that.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just the way that the system is set up. Nowadays, they're talking about the drones. You know, the latest thing is they're all worried about the drones. I said, well, we've had drones for many years. If they want to, they could locate you on a satellite, you know, shoot a laser down and maybe burn you. Maybe spontaneous combustion or something, you know, and then call it that. Oh, my God, this guy blew up. What happened? Oh, we don't know. Spontaneous laser technology.
That would be quite funny, actually. I've always dreamed of walking out of my office after doing the show, exposing some kind of real bad government conspiracy or whatever, and then just walk out and go, ah!
Exactly. Yeah, always stay in a well-covered area. Stay around lots of people. Go to the mall. You know, mix around with other people and then change your looks, wear a different hat and disguise yourself. It gets really complicated after a while if you're really deep undercover. And I've done undercover work.
Mm-hmm. Apparently the Groucho Marx glasses and mustache doesn't work very well as a disguise anymore.
Well, I noticed a lot of people are wearing that face with the V character. There was a movie, V?
V for Vendetta.
Yeah, that's it. And the guy's got a mustache and he's got a white face. A lot of people wearing the mask, you know.
Yeah, that was a mask of Guy Fawkes. My sister says he's the last man to enter Parliament with honorable intentions.
Ah, there you go.
Blow it up.
If we're going to compare some British history here, I have a special feeling for Thomas More, who was the consultant or chancellor to King Henry VIII, but he was the one that separated and did not support the divorce issue, the church and the power of the state versus the king issue. He's now delegated a saint status, but hard way to do it. Lose your head, right?
Yeah.
And I guess the Queen's feeling okay now, right?
Well, I've always seen there's this old saying, you know, keep your chin up. And the reason why they tell people that is because it's easier to cut your head off.
Yeah. Yeah, if you stick it out far enough, it'll be real easy.
Yeah.
You know? Well, you know, and that kind of ties in with what I've ended up doing with my life is that I did the right thing. I had the highest enforcement rate of interception of narcotics, fugitives, dangerous criminals, narcotics, guns, weapons, documents, illegal aliens, you name it. And yet I had to expose the corruption because the internal affairs system did not work. And when you go through the chain of command reporting these illegal activities and they still refuse to investigate it, you're basically forced to use the First Amendment, go public, after you've already gone to the congressmen and the Senate and all these other people. I've gone as high as the White House myself because I used to work there. So I have no problem contacting, you know, a head of state or somebody really important and saying, look, we've got a problem here. Let's get this fixed. And then they ignore you or they just refuse to.
You know, I've always found that that's actually their first line of defense is just to ignore concerns because if you address concerns, then the person addressing said concerns knows that they've read it and they know that they know. And then that gives them even more motivation to come after them again and saying, now that you know this, what yes. are you going to do about it? And then it gives this whole branch of obligation. Whereas politicians, especially corrupt ones, in fact, particularly corrupt ones, don't want to know the details about their scumbaggery or anybody else's, and even if they do know it, they don't want anybody to know about it because then they're culpable in some way. And I think that's right. The real reason.
Plausible deniability is the term I think that they use. I think a friend of mine, Sally Castillo, who was former DEA, actually was getting an award at the White House when Bush Sr. was there. George Herbert Walker Bush. And when he tried to tell him about the drugs that the CIA was bringing in through an airport down in Ilopango, El Salvador, Bush literally put his hands in his pockets, turned around, and walked away whistling, ignoring him. You know, what are you going to do? That's the president. If he walks away from you, you can't go up and approach him. Secret Service will intervene, and, you know, then you got a problem. And yet, there weren't too many honest presidents. I mean, Ford goes all the way back to Kennedy, believe it or not, as a congressman. Nixon, he was involved in some stuff. I think Jimmy Carter was probably one of the more honest presidents besides Kennedy in between all those other guys. And well, yet he gets criticized a lot.
Yeah, well, he did. Didn't he push the swine flu vaccine or something back then in the 70s? That wound up killing a whole bunch of people?
You know, I honestly can't remember.
Mm.
I know there was a governor in one of the states that ran for office. He was pushing one of the vaccines, and there were actually girls in school because they did it on the school children, and there were some deaths that resulted in that. But the most critical of events was the hostage crisis in Iran in 1977, I believe, 76, 77. And I left in 77 because I was trying to get in the customs agency. But Reagan was the one that was credited with finishing that incident because they tried to rescue people, but they stupidly didn't have the proper equipment. They didn't check with the Israelis, who are really good at this stuff, because they've got special sand screens on their helicopters. So you can't fly a regular helicopter into the desert and have it load up with sand, and it just disrupts the engine, then it crashes. So that's what the problem was there. But he comes to Southern California, Carter and Mrs. Carter, Rosalynn. And they're very nice people. They're very typical Southern type gentlemen and ladies, you know.
Well, I've always got this feeling, though, is basically if you're a good person that gets elected, you're a good person who doesn't know that the government and all of its servants are actually bad people. And before you know it, you're out on your ass in your first term. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. John Carman is my guest, former Secret Service. Back in a minute. The wind is going to be. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is John Carman, whose webcam seems to be failing him. John, welcome back.
Yes, looks like I lost the picture, unless you want to redo something. I don't know.
Well, all you got to do is just push that little camera button that's right there on the Skype call window. Yeah, there we go. You're back. Gotcha. You're even wearing a little. You've got a Secret Service hat that is so awesome, and it's genuine, is it?
I thought I'd share it with you because I wasn't sure if you've ever seen one or not, and I thought I'd share this.
Oh, and his badge and everything.
That's a current one.
A special agent. Yeah, I see that. Now, see, I've always wondered this. Why do they call them the Secret Service if everybody knows if everybody knows who they are?
Well, it goes back to Lincoln when they used the Pinkertons, and back in those days they didn't even have badges.
And, could you explain the Pinkertons?
The Pinkertons were a detective agency, you know, private detectives. And since they had threats against the president, it wasn't even a law back then, but basically he had to hire his own people. And this was during the war. So Secret Service basically started in 1865, right around the same time that Lincoln was killed. And
well, they obviously didn't do a very good job then.
No, because back then they had no idea what they were doing. He was in a theater. He had certain people that were with him at the time. And somehow this guy, John Wilkes Booth, the three-name suspect, of course, got in. But it was in conjunction with somebody else allowing him to get past the security. Lone male gunman theory again. But anyway, since that time, they started to develop special officers that trained. And eventually, even in Washington, D.C., the White House police that they had were actually former Metropolitan Police that transferred over and became part of the Secret Service. And then eventually they were doing stuff like counterfeiting investigations because of the biggest problem was during the World War, I'm sorry, back in Revolutionary War, excuse me, Civil War, back in the 1860s again, was the thing with counterfeiting of money. So you had money from the North, money from the South, and they wanted to get an established type of currency. So they were all using the same type, which would be no different than if they forced you guys all to use the euro. And I'm not sure what you're using in New Zealand.
We live in New Zealand. We use New Zealand dollars.
There you go. They've talked about switching that over too.
Eventually. Well, you know, sooner enough, John, I think we're going to all have one global currency, and everybody will be slaves to the bankers at the central level.
Exactly.
If we're not already.
Yeah, back to the New World Order stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think that's possible because that's all I've heard from other people who are conspiracy experts. They talk about the one world banking, the people who are the rich elite, and so on and so forth. And I go, well, it looks like it's going on to a certain extent. And I'm not at that level where I'm into it that much, but I do listen to the facts and I listen to the information. And if they can control the money, then that's why everybody should be out buying gold. In fact, I encourage people to buy gold. If you got gold coins, buy gold coins. Canadian Maple Leafs, whatever. Cougarans, Sovereigns, whatever. Even Mexican pesos are like 24 karat gold. And if you've got gold or silver to back it up, then you've got some sort of currency in case of an emergency.
That's assuming it's in your possession, because if it's just paper, you know, like a gold receipt or something, and it's elsewhere, you ain't got nothing.
That's right. It's no good. Because back in the 30s, I think it was 1933, I get my presidents mixed up. I think it's the old age kicking in here. It was either Roosevelt or the one before that. They discontinued the possession of gold by private citizens.
It sounds like a Roosevelt idea.
Yeah. And then after that, they changed it so that you could possess that. But everybody was hoarding their gold and hiding it. So at some point in time, all they were giving you is a piece of paper that's actually like it's a special fabric in exchange for silver or gold. Nowadays, you could not take a $100 bill into a bank and say, give me $100 with silver. They don't have it. They don't even have gold coins, to my knowledge. The Fort Knox, as far as I know recently, and I did work for the U.S. Mint, by the way, for like 10 or 11 months up in San Francisco. And I used to protect millions of dollars with the gold bullion. Right now, they don't even know if there's any gold at Fort Knox.
Yeah, I heard that. I believe Congressman Ron Paul wanted to be shown into Fort Knox, and he was not allowed.
Well, then there you go. It's probably because there wasn't anything there. If you went to the U.S. Mint up in San Francisco in 1982-83, you could see bars of gold, oh, probably 50 pounds apiece, at least. And if you take that and the gold price back in 1982, I think it was upwards of around maybe $200 an ounce or something. If you had just that one bar, it'd be worth millions of dollars, easy. And nowadays, the price is up to, what, $1,600, $1,700 an ounce.
There's some people saying it's going to go up to $2,000, even $5,000 an ounce soon enough.
Right.
And what's interesting is that's not a reflection of the gold gaining value. That's simply a reflection of the currency losing value. So you can't buy as much gold for your dollar anymore. People don't see that connection.
It's control. The biggest problem we got in the United States right now is they're all worried about the gun control, the gun grabbers, and the thing with the gold. That's another, you know, thing. You know, where they're trying to control people. They put them in an edge so that they scare you with something. You know, I've even got something on my website. I don't know if I mentioned my website, customscorruption.com. I compare the Hitler's Enabling Act with the Patriot Act. It's the same thing. And basically, you've probably heard the old saying, never let an emergency or a disaster go to waste.
That was Rahm Emanuel, I believe, the White House science. He said, you can't let a good crisis go to waste.
There you go. Good quote. Good quote. And when you see stuff like that, you've got to wonder. But you know what? I'm considered a conservative Republican. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat if you get voted into the White House. But after they brief you, things do change. But typically, a lot of the Democrats are mindless. They just don't get it. They don't understand any of that stuff. You know, I mean, I have an immigration background and training as well because I work the border. We could talk about Barry Sotero for a little bit, too, if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Any of the subjects.
Well, if you want to tell us about old Bazza, go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, a lot of people that I've talked to recently, I asked them, well, what do you think of Barry Sotero? One guy, he surprised me. He says, oh, he thinks he's a really nice man and all this other good stuff. I said, oh, okay. You didn't hear about the fact that he was born in Kenya and his mother was pregnant and got refused entry on a plane, so she couldn't leave for like 3 or 4 days until after he was born. And then she flew to Hawaii, which was a standardized procedure for people to try and get a birth certificate no matter where you were born. So if you got on a plane, or if your mother got on the plane after you were born and flew to Hawaii, she could fill out the application and make it look like you were born in Hawaii and put whatever information she wanted, pay the $5 or whatever it was, and you'd have a dual citizenship, which the United States doesn't recognize technically. So technically, you'd have to show up with your blue passport versus your other one, which I believe you have a yours is kind of blue, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got a picture of the Kiwi and the
It's got the seal of New Zealand, which has the Queen on the one hand with a scepter and a Maori guy heavily tattooed on the other with a taiaha, kind of fighting spear.
Right. Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen a passport from New Zealand, but some people don't understand that dual citizenship stuff. But Barry Sotero has never changed his name. His legal name is Barry Sotero, and what's interesting is that he had two fathers. One passed away. Another one was the adopted or the father-in-law. And
the Māori word for having two fathers is kaupapa.
Oh, okay. And the mother had Barry travel on an Indonesian passport because they lived in Indonesia. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute. I'm an American citizen. I certainly couldn't do that.
Mm.
Sounds like a good break.
Yeah, we've got a break coming up. We'll get into this more after it. Customscorruption.com is the website of my very special guest, John Carman. Well, he's come through a lot of government jobs, it seems like. You know, he's been the Secret Service, he's been a customs agent, you worked in Border Patrol and goodness knows what else. We're going to get a dossier on this man over the break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.